back to our top story, the Panorama programme and the state collusion in the Troubles. Mark Thompson, Director of Relatives for Justice, has contacted us this morning. Morning to you, Mark.
Morning, Stephen.
What's your reaction to the Panorama last night?
Well, Stephen, it's pretty shocking. I know some people have said we know that, but there are elements of the programme that we didn't know. We hadn't ever heard from the family of Colleen Murray before, and we hadn't heard from Vinton before. We'd heard from some of the contributors, and we hadn't heard from Billy McManus. But the programme, and I want to commend the BBC, and particularly Dara McIntyre and Bruno Walsh, who we worked with the families over the last year, they assisted in the making of the programme. It was an excellent expose, and it comes in the back of two other quite excellent programmes done by the BBC, and I'm not always the biggest fan of the BBC, and I kind of put this in the record. In the end of November or February, Vincent Kearney did an excellent programme around the Mount Vernon UVF, and around 20 people killed as a result of the activities there. And more recently, Chris Muir did another excellent programme about the Weapons and Explosive Research Centre, a shadowy organisation attached to the Special Branch. And I suppose in the broader context of those three programmes, there's nobody beating the door or beating their way to the path they ask the Secretary of State or the British Prime Minister exactly what's going on here. And if it were happening anywhere else, that would be the case. And I think what we also need to do is place it in its context, the strategic context. There were policemen killed has been exposed in the programme done with Chris Ware, and there's been Colleen Murray killed, and there's been soldiers, and they're not the only ones. And it has to go on the record that ordinary people that went out to join the RUC or serve a community or within the British Army, they weren't all involved in this. But the important thing is that the people that were in the intelligence agencies and in control of everything were. And there was a policy objective of collusion, and it spans the decades. It's been well documented. But what happened in the tail end of the conflict, and with negotiations and discussions going on behind the scenes, there was an intensification of violence. The Republicans focused on economic targets in Britain to drive to the negotiating table of the British. And what the British intelligence services did in all of that is they armed and controlled and directed loyalism, particularly against the nationalist community, driving fear and terror into it. And within that, they were involved in political assassinations and extrajudicial killings of people and the families of Republicans and Republicans.
Well, they infiltrated Republican groups as well, didn't
they? Of course they did. And it's all wrong. People miss the point. That doesn't make it easy and that, or even, and that doesn't equal it up and make it right. The bottom line is the state are there to protect people. They present themselves above the, above the paramilitaries and above the law and uphold the law. And what actually they were doing was much more reprehensible in the paramilitaries when we scratch the surface. And I want to emphasise that.
You know, I guess the unsavoury question for me to ask, but let's ask it, Mark, is in order for the security forces to be able to deal with paramilitaries, to be able to defeat them, can they ever work on a level above them? Have they got to get down to the same dirty game that they did?
Well, what happened here, Stephen, is you had the actual recruiting of people under the Walker Report. Patrick Walker was the former head of MI5 and he was based here and he wrote the Walker Report guidelines. So if you were an ordinary police officer and you arrested someone and brought them in CID and they were involved in the murder, you couldn't process them and prosecute them without first getting the nod from the Special Branch. So I think it goes a bit beyond what in any normal society, regular intelligence gathering would be. What actually we had here was the direction of murder gangs being armed, given information, clear passage, restriction orders put in place in certain areas to prohibit the presence of ordinary patrols that would have prevented that. And they've sat by. But Stephen,
what about the Basil McRae argument? Draw a line under the past.
Well, that doesn't stack up. And I think
Why not? Well,
it doesn't, because the issues aren't going to go away. It's so widespread, and it's not as simple as that. And it's quite unfair, you know, to say that to families, and especially when evidence is unpacking itself. And it's only one way. The important thing to understand here, Stephen, in the context of trying to deal with the past and why there's so much frustration, is that we've had a new beginning to policing in sorts, and I crystallise this in saying we have a new beginning in policing that if my mother were to go out tonight and had, God forbid, be mugged and have her handbag stolen or her car stolen, the response to the PSNI is a world apart from the response to the RUC. It's a professional approach, it's decent, it's civil, and it's all those things it should be. If my mother went out tonight to ask what happened to her son or her nephew who were killed in the conflict, there is absolutely no change.
Okay.
And why is that?
Okay.
It's because within the PSNI there are a cabal of officers who have retired out of it and taken the severance package, come back into the PSNI, and they control a core group within the PSNI, which is called the Legacy Support Group.
Well, now, the PSNI would very much say that they...
Stephen, this is documented in the court. They have the task of providing...
Yeah. Well, the PSNI would very much say that they uphold the law and they would support anyone seeking justice. Mark, we've got to leave it there.